ExchangeWire's ATS Singapore conference returns on July the 2nd, featuring the latest insights from an exceptional group of speakers highlighting future challenges and breakthroughs in media, marketing, and commerce. Visit exchangewire.com/events to get your ticket now. And for an exclusive 10% discount, use the code PODCAST10 at the checkout.
Welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast from ExchangeWire, bringing you the latest news and views from the world of ad tech, media, and marketing.
Hello, and welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast. I'm Grainne Reid, ExchangeWire's Head of Marketing and your host for today. I am delighted to welcome our guest this week, Pixel's founder, Alex Powell. Alex, how are you?
Very good. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you here today and in person in the office. Alongside Alex this week, we have ExchangeWire's research lead, Matt Broughton. Matt, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Grainne. Yeah, looking forward to this one. Should be a good combo.
Yeah, there's been a lot happening this week. So we've got three major news stories that have been shaping the media and advertising landscape this week. So we will discuss Mark Read's departure as WPP's CEO amid growing challenges from AI and declining share prices. We'll discuss what does this mean for the future of ad agencies. We'll also explore the latest DigiDay research showing that nearly half of publishers have seen a rise in social referral traffic. And finally, we'll unpack the growing trend of agency SSP partnerships. So let's get into it. On our first story, it was big news this week from WPP that their CEO, Mark Read, announced he'll be stepping down at the end of the year. His announcement comes as the agency struggles against the rise of AI. WPP's shares are at their lowest level in about 5 years and have shed about half of their value under his leadership over the past seven. The agency has experienced some significant client losses recently, including Coca-Cola's US media business and the ending of its relationship with Paramount. So, Alex, I'm going to come to you first. How much of WPP's struggles can actually be blamed on the rise of AI?
It's a very good question. I think sort of an opening thought around this is that the threat of AI is something that people are talking about a lot, but actually it's not necessarily going to be AI that takes people's jobs, but it's people using AI that will take people's jobs. And I think it's a complex landscape at the moment for agencies. It's an area where there's a lot of change, there's margin erosion, etc., and AI has got to contribute quite significantly to that. Hard to put an exact figure on it at this stage, but I think that the type of activities that happen within an agency are prone to AI taking over a lot of those kind of roles and jobs if people aren't careful. But the opportunity is obviously if you use AI in a smart way, you can get ahead of the curve. So kind of going back to the original statement, it's probably not going to be AI that is the challenge. It's training your staff to use AI in a smart way.
Matt, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think to build on that, I think if you look at how publishers has adapted to the retail media and AI age, they seem to have ridden that narrative wave a lot more effectively than WPP has. WPP led the way, you know, a fair few years ago in terms of the what we now term as traditional programmatic buying. But obviously, you know, AI has seen a bit of a shift change. How much of that, how much of that change remains to be seen, but obviously, you know, you've got the tale as old of time of legacy businesses failing to adapt to new technologies and losing ground. You know, Kodak, Blockbuster, Nokia, BlackBerry, MySpace, IBM, etc. So yeah, it's something that they're going to have to change that narrative around and do it quite quickly in order to recover those losses.
What does this then signal, do you think, for the future of larger agencies?
Yeah, and I think touching on the publicist piece, you know, becoming more focused around the technology that you use in order to activate deals, buy media, etc., being able to have more control around your tech stack and how you do that is going to put you in an advantage, certainly when you're pitching to clients, you know, having that tech platform feel not just a services business, but actually enabled through, you know, more sophisticated tech tools is probably going to be a real benefit.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I guess, like, When we look at WPP and what that means and not having their next CEO lined up, what should they be focusing on? So obviously with the, is it going to be AI innovation? Is it going to be client retention? What do you think, or where do you think they should go from here?
Certainly client retention. You know, I think that's something that's got to be, you know, you've got to try and stabilize that ship, you know, as much as you can. And I think in a previous life now, sort of 15, 20 years ago, I spent some time doing business transformation work for consultancies. And, you know, it's a hot topic with any kind of, you know, new tech that's coming along. AI is no different. You know, back 20 years ago when we were putting in fairly kind of prosaic now CRM systems, that was a competitive advantage. So understanding where you can, you know, transform your business using the new technology that's out there is got to be a focus. But having stable leadership to do that and having a vision and actually executing on that vision is also critical. So I think the interim period is going to be a real challenge. And I suppose if I were them, just looking at client retention, making sure you're doing a great job of keeping your existing clients happy, and then looking at the transformation piece once you've got leadership in place.
Matt, anything to add?
Yeah, I think, you know, in terms of how many major clients they've lost over the past few months, obviously Coca-Cola North America, Paramount, Starbucks, Pfizer, and yesterday we heard the news that they'd lost the $1.7 billion Mars accounts. And obviously that's a slide they're going to have to stop very quickly. Obviously, you know, we've talked about the AI piece, but they've also had a load of internal hiccups. They've obviously had the consolidation within the established, trusted media brands that they have, and it's kind of their identity has gotten a little lost there. Whereas again, coming back to Publicis, I think they've, in terms of what they've done, they've been more additive in terms of their acquisitions and what they've done internally within the business, which again makes it a much more appealing narrative. In terms of that shift to the new leader, I think there's been a, you know, bunch of names mentioned, which I think is actually quite a good thing. I think if it was a coronation straight after Mark Read, I think it would be the kind of the continuity that WPP doesn't really need. So I don't think it's a bad thing necessarily to have a few good internal candidates scrapping it out in terms of the future direction of the business, and then very much align after whoever they choose for that. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. And I agree with you completely, Alex. I think that interim period is going to be quite tricky for them to navigate, but I don't think it's all lost at sea for WPP.
No, and I think you see a lot, don't you? You know, innovation is such a value creator, and you can see what publicists are doing. And I think, you know, a space that we play in is around kind of creator content, influencer content, distributing it out to sort of different channels beyond the walled gardens. I think if you look at some of the acquisitions that both WPP and publicists have made, Publicis with Captivate and Influential, WPP with Goat, you know, if you look at some of the innovations, you look at where the market's going. I think there was a Guardian article off the back of ironically WPP research that looked at the tipping point now of creator content actually generating more revenue than traditional media revenue. Then looking at ways that you can leverage your existing acquisitions and what you can do there around the influencer space in a world where more traditional media budgets have got less margin, is things that they can look at in the very near term. That's an opportunity that's right in front of them, really.
I guess that sounds promising then. Like, so you're seeing it from more of an opportunity for the agencies rather than major turbulence.
I hope so. I mean, yeah, and that then comes down to good management, yeah, and stabilizing the ship. And that's never an easy thing to do with companies the size of the holdcos, right? But I think, you know, just paring it down to its basic principles and looking at where you can add value, you know, where's the innovation happening? You know, AI is a threat. It's also an opportunity, but actually there's plenty of other areas where there are new opportunities emerging. And that's the beauty of technology, is that it moves fast and creates opportunities for those who are set up to take advantage of that.
Great. Well, I think we'll move on nicely now to our second story. So over the last year, nearly half of publishers have seen an increase in the referral traffic they get from social media platforms. According to DigiDay Research, which surveyed more than 50 publisher professionals during the second quarter of this year, 47% of publisher pros said that their companies had seen an increase in social referral traffic since January of last year. 14% said Facebook has driven most of their increase in social referral traffic over the last year, and 11% said the same of Instagram. 11% of publisher pros also said that TikTok has driven most of the increase in social referral traffic that they've seen since January 2024. Alex, are you surprised at these figures?
So, yes, because back when I was doing consulting for some of the online publishers here in the UK, it was at a time where, so this was 7 years ago, at the very beginning of that, there was real excitement around the referral traffic that social was creating for publishers. And then overnight, Facebook in Silicon Valley woke up and totally changed their algorithm around the social referral traffic. And that had huge implications for publishers who were growing nicely, reinvesting that money into quality journalism. Everything felt very buoyant and happy. And then suddenly overnight to know that you are at the mercy of these big tech platforms, I think really sent shockwaves through a lot of these big global publishers operating out of the UK. It's great to see that those tables have turned slightly. And I think with the threat around search referral traffic, where people are, and I'm definitely one that, you know, personally sits in this camp, reaching for other tools other than Google search to do research and, you know, ask the general questions that you ask yourself during the day, but turn to tools to try and work out the answer. I think, you know, it's good to see that there's another side of the coin that is proving an opportunity for publishers in what is a very difficult time. And I hope that they don't wake up soon and change their algorithms again.
With the algorithms too, do you think that publishers are looking at adapting their strategies to align with this, or is it purely just the algorithms?
I know it requires a lot of skill internally within the publishers to understand what the implications, you know, of those algorithms are, and how you play the game of ensuring that you work with them, not against them. And so as they constantly change, the teams within the publishers have got, you know, a very difficult job to kind of keep up with what's going on, especially when you've got more platforms that you've got to understand how it works. Certainly within the social landscape, there's been an interesting move over the last year away from a social graph, which is where you've got people who follow other people get their content, to more of a content graph, where if I'm watching videos 1, 2, and 3 on TikTok, and you've watched videos 1 and 2, you'll be recommended video 3. So there's a lot less admin for the user to be able to get content that they care about. But understanding those different nuances across the different platforms. So that's TikTok. Zuckerberg has talked a lot about implementing a content graph to try and compete in that space. It's something that YouTube's always done very well. So I think keeping up with the pace of change and how you can use those kind of constructs, if you like, to generate traffic is an opportunity, but it's also not straightforward.
Matt, what are your thoughts on these figures?
Yeah, I was quite surprised by them as well. I think, yeah, to Alex's point, in terms of the growth across Meta's platforms, it does seem a rather small about turn given their, you know, complete axing of publisher, you know, social referral traffic in the past. And yeah, echo the hopes that they don't change their mind yet again on that. I think LinkedIn outpacing TikTok by 20% to 8% in terms of where the majority of a publisher's referral traffic is, that's quite surprising to me. I would obviously love to see the split in terms of the publishers that DigiDay has surveyed there in terms of B2B versus B2C. Obviously, if it's a trend that's consistent across the B2C side of things, then that's very surprising to me. I was also quite surprised at how underperforming Reddit was relative to some of the other platforms, and it was only just matching Blue Sky in terms of the channels driving social referral growth. And obviously, given the overall growth we've seen on the Reddit platform, obviously they're leaning very, very heavily into AI, which could be affecting the referral traffic side of things. But yeah, I would expect that to be a little higher than Blue Sky, which is almost a protest vote against X rather than a social platform carving its own identity in its own right.
Yeah, the LinkedIn piece is really interesting. I spend more and more of my day on LinkedIn. It's becoming, a kind of cornerstone of how you communicate with the market as a small business. There's a huge opportunity there for small businesses to leverage that. It seems to be where so many people are. Very surprising that, publishers are able to generate traffic from that. But it makes sense if people are spending more time on it, and it comes back to this algorithm piece. What is their algorithm for showing, posts from publishers around content?
Obviously, it's something we look at very, very deeply as a B2B publisher, and it's, we can look at posts we've published and be like, oh, why has that performed really well on LinkedIn versus we're expecting that one to perform a little better. So yeah, it's very interesting to work with that platform and work with those algorithms. But yeah, obviously we're very much a B2B side of things. Yeah. But how much of that is reflective on the B2C side of things would be very interesting.
And on that, do you find that posting video is helping? So I know there's been a big move on LinkedIn. I'm seeing more and more video. Are you finding that sort of thing becoming a good content strategy?
Yeah, generally. And I think in terms of, obviously, as you referred to there, the search referral traffic, I think, diversifying beyond purely text-based content, have that mixture of, the articles, the videos and the podcasts, obviously. I think that's generally, on LinkedIn and other platforms as well. That's a strategy that's, working well.
Yeah, great. Good to hear.
Yep, we're building on that as well, for sure. So how do you think the increase in social referral traffic is impacting revenue models for publishers? So do you think we're seeing a shift in monetizing strategies, and what challenges then come with relying on social platforms for their audience growth?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it's understanding what the business model is for the social platform doing the referral traffic. I know that back in the day when we were looking at things like, and this makes me sound very old, Facebook instant articles and, all of those kind of products that the big social media platforms put out back in the day, whilst the vanity metrics of traffic were great, the revenue wasn't. So it'd be interesting to understand what the model is back to the publisher now. YouTube, to be fair to them, has always been pretty good at keeping the content creator well kind of remunerated, well rewarded for their content. I just hope that some of the newer platforms, certainly platforms like TikTok, I remember talking to publishers about their use of TikTok last year. There was no monetization strategy for TikTok until very recently. So, you've got to be careful that you're not just chasing traffic, but it's kind of empty traffic if there's no way of getting paid for it to fund your content.
Yeah, I think that's why we're seeing, in terms of that surprising finding, in terms of LinkedIn outpacing TikTok, it's because those monetization strategies just haven't necessarily been in place, and marketers are still going, it's there, it's giving nice views. Obviously, everyone talks about campaigns going viral on TikTok, etc. But how can we as publishers actually use it? That's not necessarily been in place up until this point and going forward as well.
What do you think this means for publishers? A positive outlook for them, or
I hope so. I feel like publishers are going to be at their strongest when they're focusing on creating content. And I know that sounds obvious, but we used to have debates about whether, how far you go into creating a tech platform as a publisher versus content. And I think the opportunity here is that you are able to focus very heavily on creating content if you're supported by these platforms. But the risk is that, one day they change their attitude and it no longer fits with some kind of strategy in Palo Alto. And suddenly, you've got a problem again. So I think it's about building defensible ways of working with these platforms, which is easier said than done. But there's definitely a positive angle to it, getting it right. I'd be really interested from some of the experts in the kind of publisher space and what they think those models look like. And I think I've always found that the publisher community, certainly in the UK, is very collaborative. You know, whilst they compete, they also collaborate. And I think that will be kind of a really important step within this to understand where it's working, where it's not. You know, publishers have got a powerful voice, so they should actually be able to influence as well.
Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, I'd completely agree with that. I think the one area I'd say where the outlook isn't quite as bright is obviously that dip in search referral traffic as a result of generative AI tools. We've obviously had the report from the WSJ in last week demonstrating that across many publishers, organic search traffic has plummeted as a result of Google's AI tools, and that's not even including the AI mode they've recently ran. So that's obviously going to be of serious concern to publishers.
Let's be honest, Google search, and I never thought we'd see the day, is currently a total mess when you go on there, right? Like, you 100%. Don't know what you're getting. And so, you know, I never thought we'd see the day where Google was a total mess, but at the moment,
yeah,
it really
exactly.
is,
and
right?
I think where so many publishers have based a lot of their audience strategies around search, around that organic search piece, they're going to be worried right now, understandably. And I think, you know, to combat that diversification of business models. Obviously, we've talked about going after video and audio, but obviously we've seen, you know, the likes of New York Times leaning in more to their app strategy, and I think those, you know, we are going to see sadly some, you know, results in the market. Obviously, we've seen the layoffs that have occurred at Business Insider, and there may be more layoffs to come at other publishers. But I think the scale publishers, I think they'll be able to navigate the choppy waters. What I do worry about is more that local journalism, local news publishing piece, because I think where that leans in a lot more into that organic search piece at the moment. And I think where we've had, you know, a lot of kind of roll-ups of local news publishing under, you know, umbrellas, and, you know, those sites now have generally quite a very high ad load. And now if it's a case of, if you're a user and you can get the answers from those sites just by typing in Perplexity, Google, Gemini, any, you know, AI provider, why would you click into those sites that have the really heavy ad loads when you can just get that answer through generative AI? So I think that's where, as an industry, and I think that collaboration piece will come in really strongly, is, you know, how can we protect local news journalism across these obviously turbulent times on that organic search piece?
Yeah, it's a really good point. I mean, as a company, when we first started out, before we kind of changed direction and worked much more closely with brands directly, with agencies, etc., we were selling SaaS technology to publishers, and that didn't work. And so, you know, publishers at that time, and this was 3 years ago, were looking for a complete solution that generated money for them and not a part solution that and it meant that they had to go the extra yard to make the money. And so I think if I were them, I'd be being very careful with those solutions that offer an end-to-end solution, because they are going to take advantage of that. But at the same time, as a publisher, you know, appreciating that that's the direction of travel, you know, for us, you know, we are increasing yields for publishers by distributing creator content onto their sites, and they see the advantage of that. But I think that's because they are much more in control of their web owned and operated. As soon as that goes onto different platforms, that becomes a lot more difficult.
Yeah. And I think that's where, in the past, where we've seen those massive changes from the likes of Facebook, it's tied the shoelaces of those publishers. But yeah, I think
that's a great way of putting it. It's very true.
Coming to that point, just, you know, look at diversified ways of operating to navigate these changes. But yeah, recognize the overall direction of things.
Yeah, and I think ultimately, as social platforms evolve and referral traffic grows, publishers just need to stay agile.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, well, I think we'll move on now to our final story for today, which in a DigiDay article, it was noted that more media agencies are attempting to go around traditional ad tech gatekeepers to strike their own deals with supply side platforms. Media agencies are under pressure, positioned between marketers on tight budgets and the cost of doing business with major demand side platforms. As a result, agencies are looking to tie themselves closer to SSPs, striking new partnership deals, leaning further into established ones, and consolidating their programmatic investments through the largest players in that space. Execs at SSPs have told DigiDay they're attempting to reach beyond the major holding company networks. Alex, how do you think this affects different players in the ad tech ecosystem?
So it's, I think, makes total sense that this is happening. The SSPs, in their own words, sometimes refer to themselves as the dumb pipes, which I think is actually not correct anymore. I think the level of integration that you can do with an SSP these days around building curation packages, plug in directly to their bid stream, understand that data contextually. It's a great space for AI large language models to play and learn and be trained on that data. I think there's a wave of new companies that are building really innovative, interesting new applications on top of that infrastructure. And so agencies going direct to the SSP, that's a margin play, right? So that's them being able to control some of the kind of ad tech costs, tax that you get. But actually, on the other side, there's so much going on around what you can now do with integrating with an SSP that I don't think it's going to change the need for ad tech companies to offer services to agencies. It's just changing.
Matt, anything to add there?
Yeah, I completely agree. Obviously, you've got the, you know, ongoing consolidation within the industry just to get that, you know, more efficient supply path, because obviously efficiency is still the aim of the game in terms of how, you know, the wider economy is working. I don't think there'll be necessarily a complete and total convergence within the DSP SSP space, because obviously the theoretical nature of the market, there are buyers and sellers. One platform managing all of that while maintaining the full transparency that's needed. I think that's a bit of a pipe dream. But yeah, definitely more efficient buying pathways are set to come to the fore. I completely agree with Alex in terms of how agencies, they're looking to drive those efficiencies, which is why we're seeing them want to get those closer relationships. But I think, you know, in terms of how we've seen principle-based media buying come to the fore, or at least be discussed a lot more in recent months. And I don't think that's necessarily the direction agencies should be looking for, because Alex said, you know, AI is going to lead to more customizable media plans. So yeah, selling a defined, you know, clump of inventory with possibly reduced visibility, I don't think that's the approach that agencies should be looking for. They should lean into more customization for their clients, and obviously more visibility and insight into, okay, this is the media buy we've made for you, and this is why, this is where we're driving those efficiencies and media effectiveness for you.
Yeah, and if you think about where that comes from potentially as well, SSPs have got the context about the publisher and the page, but you know, there's the user. And so you need to understand, you know, the difference between a campaign that uses some form of user data, either in a third-party cookie world or a post third-party cookie world using universal IDs. It's such an important part of the process of delivering really like valuable outcomes for brands. And so there's politics at play. And I think you've got to be realistic that whilst, you know, if you were going to draw this new world from scratch today, it might look different to what it does look like today. That's just the reality of how industries evolve. And so I think, you know, on one hand, it makes sense. On the other hand, you've got the politics in play that's going to create a lot of friction for that kind of SPO world to exist.
Yeah, exactly. And I think where you've got the big tech platforms with their massive scale black box AI solutions, obviously, the rest of the market is seeing the response from that. But I think obviously, you know, you need to have the scale of those big tech platforms to make those solutions work. So yeah, it's a really interesting time within the industry, and it's going to be really interesting to see how
it all shakes
out. And I think
it's just great to see the SSPs play a more important role, yeah. Right? And I think that's the piece here. You know, how that ends up being accessed is a different matter. But you know, the idea that you can almost create like a tech mesh on top of the SSP that creates real value, and what I mean by that is, you know, you're able to do things with the data that sits within the SSP that is both beneficial to the publisher and beneficial to the brand, and to be able to offer that, that's a really interesting space to operate in, and actually starts to create much more interesting user experiences for the people actually kind of consuming that content. You know, you're able to get much closer to the content, which means you're more able to get closer to the end user, and I think that's really positive.
So, what do you think is actually driving the shift towards direct agency SSP partnerships? So, how does it reshape the traditional programmatic buying? Are agencies gaining more control? Do you think it will create new challenges and transparency?
I don't think necessarily it will create new challenges. I think it is more just in terms of particularly the agency side of things, where they are more exposed as a natural intermediary, rather than they're not necessarily the ones who are advertising their own product. They're not a publisher, so they're not trying to monetize space on their site. So they're trying to get, you know, closer to those pathways. I think it's not, again, it's not necessarily they're going to completely, you know, throw DSPs out the water. They're just wanting to get closer to where the pathways are more efficient. So yeah, it's an evolution rather than a revolution.
Very good. Yeah, totally agree.
Great. And what players do you think are in the strongest position at the moment, Alex?
Within that space. So I think for the agency side, you know, to your point, understanding the context as well as the user is kind of probably part of what's driving that. And I think the opportunity is around where you've got companies that are able to build on top of the SSPs. And I think, you know, that comes from being able to integrate more deeply than you could before with those platforms and work with both the publisher side and the agency and brand side to kind of make that a reality.
What are your thoughts, Matt? Anyone that springs to mind?
Not necessarily specific companies, and it's going to sound completely obvious me saying this, but I think any player that offers that differentiation, whether it's on that efficiency front, whether it's on the inventory quality front, whether it's on the creative format front, I think obviously scale is still hugely important across the industry. But if you look at any ads.txt file, chances are you're going to see the majority of the leading players on any given file. So yeah, I think offer that differentiation, and I think also be agile. We're in such a, you know, developing space. Obviously, we've talked about generative AI. We've got a lot of solutions now talking about agentic AI, and obviously we've still got the potential breakup or changing of Google's ad stack, which will obviously have a massive effect across the rest of the programmatic supply chain. But also, I think, don't think, you know, as a company, don't necessarily throw the baby out with the bathwater. If you've got a USP, obviously, yes, adapt to changes, be agile to changes, but remember what makes your company unique, rather than, you know, one minute you're leaning heavily into contextual and the next minute, oh yeah, we're an agentic AI platform. Obviously, that's going to raise questions in terms of how much of that is your actual ethos, or is it reactive change to the market?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, for us, what it's enabled for us as a business is being able to understand the context of the page, fantastic, but also get much deeper into the user experience and the implications of that. So, you know, we're distributing creator content onto relevant contextual publisher pages. Take football as an example, beginning of the Premier League, you're able to get creator content, people talking about what they think is going to happen in the lead up to a match, etc., and offer the brand brand and experience around that and being able to associate with that, that wasn't possible before, yeah. Right? So, you know, that's great. But to your point, you know, stay in your lane. Don't try and, you know, offer everything to everyone, because we live in quite a kind of modularized world, certainly within the kind of open web app CTV world. And so kind of, I think respecting that is really important.
Yeah, absolutely.
Amazing. Well, I think that's a nice place to end this story and to end the podcast for today. Alex, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your thoughts and opinions.
Brilliant. Thank you, guys. Really enjoyed it.
And Matt, as always, thank you.
Thanks, Gráinne. You've been an absolute pleasure as ever.
Amazing. Thank you all for listening. That is it for the Mad Tech podcast this week, and we look forward to tuning in next week.
You've been listening to the Mad Tech podcast, brought to you by Exchange Wire.